This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
The Blitz.
What is up? What is up? It is a beautiful Monday. And the Vols are headed to Omaha. Man, when does a Monday feel this good? 10:06, you're listening to The Blitz here with Charlie. And then to my right, we got Will Stevens filling in the week.
What's
and
up,
of
Charlie?
Course, behind the board, GP3. Boys, how was y'all's weekend? How's everyone doing today?
Solid weekend. Vols obviously took two dubs. I think the poll that the drive did was sitting at probably, I think, 45% of the people said Vols in two, 43% of the people said Vols in three. That 45% of people looked really, really smart this weekend, and it felt really, really good.
I had Vols in three, but
I had Vols in two. I even said it on the show last week here.
Yeah, you and Chance had Vols in two. I should have listened to you. Who knew that we were just going to chase Marceau like that, but man.
Was there something wrong with him? Like, why did he get pulled after three innings? Was he just not
rested enough? You know, I was kind of wondering the same. I mean, his pitch count was already getting up there, and Tennessee was seeing it well. And, you know, they did get three runs off of him. And then, maybe just the heat. You know, I think that could be a factor in yesterday's game that, like, we didn't really talk about a lot is, man, on that turf, you know, the feels like temperature was up around 100.
Oh, yeah.
100 plus. It was hot. So when you put together those long innings where you make these pitchers throw and get guys on base and really leave that LSU defense out there for a while early in the game, I mean, that can really wear them out. And Tennessee was able to get out of innings pretty quickly defensively.
And then you also heard the announcers kept saying that LSU was going to go to, was it Fontenot, out of their bullpen? They said, oh, that's their best bullpen arm. And they didn't go to him until the game was out of hand. It just seemed like really poor managing from Maneri's standpoint.
Yeah, but it was one of those decisions. I feel like if I think it was Edwards or something like that, the guy who came in right after Marceau and got pulled, it was a really weird, I think they said injury, but I mean he didn't seem injured, but I'm not going to speculate on that obviously. But that was one of those decisions that if that guy they put in comes in and sits Tennessee right down, that's a really good decision by Paul Maneri, but it backfired really, really quickly. I think, I mean, if you pull Marceau out of the game quickly and Tennessee doesn't score another run, Paul Maneri looks like a genius and we're still playing today. But because Tennessee steps up and is able to hit, what was it, two home runs in that inning before we finally got sat down, Paul did not have a fun retirement party.
So we got a big show coming up for you guys today. Obviously going to be breaking down Tennessee going to Omaha. Get your hockey update as always. Tennessee football, they got to commit. Got a little NBA playoffs to talk. And at 10:30, LDQ Sports, Logan Quinton, the man himself, will be joining the show to break down this past weekend. But, you know, I want to ask you guys this because I was thinking about it last night. You know, I know that baseball is the least popular, or at least has been, in years past, of the major three sports. But Tennessee winning the Super Regional and getting to Omaha, I mean, are there any other moments that UT Athletics have had in the major sports that have compared to that within the last, I don't know, 15 years since 2006, 2007 on?
Are you talking about like accomplishment or joy that I was?
You know, I guess both.
I feel like, I mean, you have to throw it back to those Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield teams that made a little bit of a run, but nothing's ever felt like this. Like,
the Hail Mary against Georgia, I mean, we were still undefeated at that point. Felt like we were a team of destiny. Of course, everything went downhill starting the next week at A&M. But in that moment, I mean...
You were on top of the world, it felt like, for a second.
Yeah, in that moment, it felt like you'd saved your season. You know, you were still undefeated, but...
The comeback against Florida, scoring 38 unanswered.
I wonder how that season goes if that Hail Mary is incomplete. Like, I wonder if that just completely reverses it, where we actually end up with just one loss, and the one loss is to Georgia, or if it was always bound to just go straight downhill.
With Butch Jones as a coach, it would have gone downhill That's no fair. Matter what.
That's fair.
But, no, I mean, there's those two games that stick out, the Grant Williams and Admiral games, those are... ones that I guess, or that season as a whole, getting to number one. And then it's down, I don't know if you guys really remember it, but right after we got to number one, that game against Vanderbilt, that was a shootout. And then we ended up holding them off.
Yeah, the hook and hold.
Yeah.
Questionable hook and hold.
Was that the one at Vandy where Grant Williams went like 25 of 25 from the free throw line?
Yeah.
That was
he scored
game.
Over 40 points in that game. So there was that game because it was literally the week after we got to number one.
Man, I don't think anything. I think all of those are very fun moments and fun to look back on. But I don't think anything compares to what's going on right now. Like, hell, Grant Williams and John Fulgerson were both on those basketball teams. They were in attendance and looking like they were having the most fun out of anybody in those stands.
Yeah, Fulgerson doesn't sit down the entire game. Every time I looked around, he was just because you can see him. There aren't a lot of 6'10" dudes just casually strolling on the concourse and behind the seats. And he just, everywhere I went, he was just walking around somewhere. Like, I don't think he had even a seat, maybe.
No, I think he is really embracing this fifth-year celebrity persona, almost, where you're just going to enjoy.
Six-year,
my bad.
He really has. I mean, he's got the shirts that say, Folk?
Folk Smash.
Yeah, he crashed WBIR's broadcast last night. He was just walking past and goes, can I hop on? And the guy was like, no, and then turns around and realizes it's Folk. He was like, yeah, you can hop on.
No, it's Folky, yeah. There are no
live on
you.
Air. Very, very funny, but yeah. I don't think anything compares to what's going on right now in Knoxville.
If you're a beloved six-year senior, why not have the time of your life?
Oh, yeah. No, there's no reason I don't want to be mean. We're kind of hyping up Folky, but I don't want to be mean right here. But, like, he's not an NBA center. Right, he's not an NBA big man. There's no reason to put your nose really down to the work stone and overgrind right here. Just enjoy your summer. Go to work when basketball season starts.
You know, those are some big moments, though. You know, those teams and the Florida game and the Hail Mary, but
beating Kentucky in basketball in the semifinals of the SEC tournament.
This, you know, I probably had more joy maybe in some of those other moments, but I don't think I've ever been more proud.
Proud, yeah, that's what
proud.
I was going to say.
Yeah,
too.
I think
just
like,
confident,
like just the sense of pride that I have. Like, oh, we're not just a mediocre team or a slightly above average team that's made a run or anything along those lines. Like, we have a great coach. We have a great team. We are a highly ranked team. We've been successful from the first game all the way through the Supers so far. You know, we haven't dropped a game in the postseason. It has just been a consistent, thing that Tennessee has just been one of the best teams in baseball this year. And it's not something I've ever really experienced with Tennessee athletics, being the best at something for an extended period of time. It just feels good.
Yeah, this feels
gives you extra pep in your step.
Kind of like you were saying with those, we're not a team that's kind of coming out of nowhere. Like LSU, I mean, all the disrespect and everything, and we'll get into that game. But, I mean, they weren't a great team, and they put it together down the stretch and made a decent run. But, like, this is the first season, I feel like, where Tennessee sports have been talked about preseason, and then we made the experts look smart. Like, every year we'll either be overhyped, and then we fall off, like this past year in basketball, or the Grant Williams teams where you're picked 13th to finish in the SEC and you prove the experts wrong. This is the first year that the experts were right about us and we proved them all right. It feels really, really good.
What sticks out to me is with the whole battered ball syndrome where you just expect something bad to happen because that's what's happened in the past. Every time you expect something to go wrong with this team, the opposite.
Knock on wood right now.
Yeah, the opposite happens.
Knock on wood right now, GP3.
No, I'm saying, like, so far, because, like, Wright State, you thought, typical Vols, you're going to drop the first game of the regionals, walk off Grand Slam. You're going to get swept by Arkansas. Fergie walk off, 3-run shot. Oh, you're going to lose to Vanderbilt, you know, tear up the presumed number one overall pick in Leiter. Just seems like every time you think something bad's going to happen, it doesn't. And, I mean, you can say knock on wood and everything. I think we've well over-accomplished what we expected this season. And going into Omaha, I feel like we're playing with house money.
Oh, for sure, for sure. But, obviously you want to win in Omaha and a huge game at 1 o'clock between Dallas Baptist and Virginia to decide the game one, if I'm not mistaken. But, I mean, you said it best. You're playing with house money. Everything you do in Omaha, I mean, you're still going to get a beautiful welcome home parade. We're all going to be wearing orange when Tony V comes back to Knoxville after leaving. I mean, you really are playing with house money.
You know what the best part is, though?
I do not.
As fans, we might be thinking that we're playing with house money, but the team doesn't.
Oh, no.
And that's the excellent part. Like, they expected to be in Omaha. I expected them to be in Omaha. You know, they expect to be in the final series in a week in 3 days. And they expect to ultimately win that series and win a national championship, too. And anything less than that for them, I mean, they didn't meet their expectations. And I think they still have a lot of work to do. I'm very excited to see what they do.
It feels good to have a team that has honest expectations, because it always felt like the Butch teams, we're just trying to be the best that we can be. The Jeremy Pruitt teams, we're just trying to take every snap as we go, and that the JG is the guy to lead us there. This year we have expectations, and we're close to meeting ours. We're not even close to meeting their expectations yet.
865-546-8200 if you want to hop on. Give us a call. We'll be right back here after this break. You're listening to The Blitz. Back on The Blitz. Charlie, Will, GP3 breaking down Tennessee baseball. Let's get into these games. Let's just, kind of walk through what happened, break them down a little bit. Obviously, Friday night, you start things off. Chad Dallas on the bump. And in a kind of a surprise, Marceau not able to go for LSU in game one. They really strained him in that Eugene regional, and they wanted to give him a little bit of extra rest. So instead, it was Hilliard for LSU, and this one starts off with some rain that I don't really think people saw coming. I didn't see it coming, and my weather app didn't either. But
yeah, there's like maybe two people at the block party who had ponchos, and no one prepared for the
weather. Yeah, I mean, I live like 10, 15 minutes away from the stadium, and when I saw how bad it was raining there, I just opened my window, looked outside, and just bright skies, sunny. Like
I was looking, I was sitting with Tucker at that game, actually. Your guy, Will, but...
Put that on me, but just in case of what he did. But yeah, Tucker is my co-host.
Well, yeah, we were looking at the weather radar, and the cell that was raining itself was like the size of a high school, and it just happened to be right on top of Lindsey Nelson. So of course, Chad Dallas has to go out there and pitch in what looked to be a monsoon,
and he was not happy about it. We can say that. Like he did not.
I would
want
not
to
be
pitch.
Either. There is a puddle forming at the bottom of the mound. I mean,
like they couldn't have waited just 10 minutes. Like they ended up having to wait anyways because of the lightning strike after the storm had already passed.
It's true.
I mean,
but
it is pretty cool to have a little moat beyond the mound. It makes you kind of feel like the mound's a castle almost. But it was getting nasty out there.
That's a way to put it, I guess.
But Cade Doughty runs into one. I don't know how he saw it. I can't imagine trying to track a pitch that is moving while big raindrops are falling in between me and the guy throwing it.
And it was up in the zone, too. Like, that's not one he just flung the bat at. Like, he saw it all the way in.
But somehow he did see it. I didn't see it off the bat either. All of a sudden, I just looked to right field, and we're watching it sail over our head. It was pretty impressive. It led to some really cool pictures, too. So props to them for that homer. So they take the lead, and then, of course, the rain subsides just in time for LSU to pitch in the bottom of the second.
Did that remind you guys of that Tennessee-LSU football game a couple years ago.
Does LSU just bring rain with them just in case? Because
the opening half in the second, the opening drive of the second half was our ball, and it was pouring. Like, couldn't see anything. I was in the upper deck and could not see the field. And we had to play in it. And then, of course, as soon as we punt the ball, rain stops, LSU goes down and scores.
Yeah, but they bring the rain. That's their thing now.
That almost comes full circle. T-Bob was on that team. He was the guy who made the snap with too many men on field on purpose to get Tennessee that penalty. So
those are two different games.
Oh, am I just stupid? Fair enough. I tried to make a segue. My apologies.
I was talking about 2017.
Yeah, T-Bob.
Like the guy that
Yeah, the guy who was talking trash. He was a four-star center. He was the son of, I think, just Bob Herbert, if I'm not mistaken, of the NFL variety.
Wow. And did not realize any of these things. I thought he was just a hairy, kind of weird guy.
Well, 100% is all of that. He just also has a past of a football player.
I did not think he looked athletic. Wow, my mistake.
I mean, played center, not really athletic, but yeah, no. My bad. I didn't mean to.
Don't you dare slander centers. Those are some of the most athletic
linemen.
Yeah, but centers are some of the most athletic people out there.
Wrist strength.
Trust me on that. Oh no, I mean, the ability to snap the ball and then be agile enough to get over to your right or to your left and block a 320-pound man, and it's impressive.
Sorry, I don't think people who just get in people's way are athletes.
You know, we have two baseball games to break down.
This is an off-season conversation.
Things can get pretty aggressive if you want them to. So 50-minute lightning delay. So I kind of worried that it was going to chase both pitchers from the game, and then all of a sudden, you weren't going to have Chad Dallas, and they didn't lose their Marceau because Marceau was going to pitch Saturday. But both pitchers come back out, and at that point, Chad Dallas starts dealing. I mean, he is absolutely dealing. It was the best we've seen him in a while. You know, he wasn't fantastic down the stretch, wasn't great in that game against Wright State, but
he finished with 12 strikeouts.
Yeah, strikes out 12 in a pretty big spot.
That's a new season high for him. His previous was 11, also against LSU.
So there's something about those LSU batters that Chad Dallas likes to see. But you tie it up in the bottom of the third. You get a runner on, move him over, and then Pavloni grounds him home. Some good textbook small ball. And then LSU takes the lead on you again in the top of the fifth. Throwing error from Pavloni. They got Chad Dallas into a little bit of a jam, and then on the steal of third, throw it in the outfield, a run scores. Good job to get out of the jam in the first place. And at that point, things weren't looking great. Tennessee was not really putting together great at-bats. You know, they were seemed to be pretty off balance, chasing a lot of breaking balls. And then they string some stuff together in the sixth. LSU goes to that bullpen. And then you get an RBI from Drew Gilbert, an RBI from Luke Lipsius, and then a single from Jordan Beck to put you up 4-2. Put Sean Hundley in, and you close the door. I mean, that was all you needed the rest of the way. Things did get a little tense there at the end, but Hundley had just enough in him to get it done. He ended up striking out 4 over 3 innings. Did give up those 3 hits, but, you know, he gets the big save.
Now, how about Maneri pulling Hilliard that early, too?
I thought it was weird that he pulled him that early, but you know, at the same time, I guess I don't know if maybe his arm, just didn't have a ton left in him because
it felt like to me that Maneri was managing the entire weekend as if he was saving up for a game 3. That's what it just felt like to me. It's like he wasn't trying to win each specific game. He was trying to save arms for a potential game 3.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing there too. You got swept earlier in the season. I think you just got to come out and try to get at least one.
Yeah, I don't think he was trying to save arms for a game 3, because if that was the case, he would have stretched his guys out more, and he threw a ton of people.
Well, but no, I mean by like pulling Hilliard so early, he could have gone again in a game 3 if needed. Same with Marceau. Like, with him only pitching 3 innings, he could come in relief. It just felt like he wasn't letting guys go as long as they could have because he wanted the option to have them in a game 3 if necessary. That's kind of the feel I got of it. I mean,
I don't know. My main takeaway from Chad Dallas and his performance is the kind of the talk of the broadcast when it first was getting started is Chad Dallas, great pitcher. Win-loss record is a little deceiving as he's needed a ton of run support, though, throughout the game. That 4-2 win, 4 points ties the season low, or is third in terms of the lowest amount of runs Chad Dallas has had when pitching. There was one game we scored zero against Vanderbilt, and LSU, one of the wins we got 3-1. Every other game he's had a ton of run support, so it was impressive to see him be able to get the win without all the run support that he is so used to.
LSU, just he has a feel for them, and he's one of those guys. I mean, we talk about it every week with Logan. The team just gets fired up when he's on the mound. Seems like they play more locked in when he's the one pitching. He doesn't have great stuff, but he just gets you out. I mean, he'll strike you out. He'll might give up two home runs in a game, but he'll also strike out 10. He has elite precision with his pitches. Yeah.
He pounds his zone. That's what he does. He's going to give up the hits. He's going to give up a couple home runs, but he's going to make you earn it. He's not going to walk many people.
Mm-hmm. I also don't even know if this was the biggest accomplishment of the weekend, as he was also gifted the title uncle this weekend, as I believe his brother, I'm assuming, maybe sister, someone had a baby, and he quote tweeted it saying Uncle Cheese, which is a great uncle name. Call yourself Uncle Cheese.
We also learned the origins of the Cheese nickname this weekend. I don't know if you saw it because it was talked about on the broadcast.
Yeah, I have
no
idea.
I don't think I saw this. I might have been using the bathroom or something.
From the Goofy movie, the guy.
Wow.
When he was a kid.
Did not expect that one.
When he was a kid, he loved Goofy movie, and the guy who had like the can of Cheese Whiz that would walk around all the time just saying
that's where he got I always messed with that guy, but I didn't know. I thought it was just like he went by Chaz for a little bit and then it just turned into Cheese.
That's
slowly.
What I would have thought too, but no, it was from the Goofy movie.
But no, a solid performance for sure with 12 strikeouts.
I always thought it was his cheese because he was just, you know, throwing cheese.
That's what I thought. Like,
makes a strike.
It's a good
the
nickname
zone
for
look like Swiss, just putting holes through it.
It's a good nickname for a pitcher, though.
Yes, it is for sure.
Moving on, though, game two yesterday, home run fest. I mean, really, you didn't think that was going to be the case. With, we know Blade Tidwell's been your best pitcher as of late. And then Marceau is obviously their ace. And you had those two going at it. You know, you kind of thought maybe you get a lower scoring game. Instead, you start off the top of the first with a Jake Rucker moonshot to give Tennessee the 2-1 lead. Dylan Cruz matches that in the bottom of the first.
That kid's good. That kid is really good.
Very good.
LSU's got some good freshmen. I'm nervous about that.
They were just going back and forth. It looked like a home run derby for a second because then Rucker got one back in the third and Cruz got one back in the bottom of the third. So at that point, it was 3-2, and that's when LSU went to their bullpen, and that's when the game really changed because LSU, their pitching is really just Marceau, Fontenot, and Hilliard. And Hilliard is, you know, not even that fantastic. I mean, and they have a very hittable bullpen. And on a day like yesterday, I mean, Tennessee was ready to jump all over that bullpen. You have a Pavloni homer, a Drew Gilbert homer, a Jordan Beck home run, all in the fourth and fifth inning. I mean, you go from 3-2 in the third to 11-2 by the time you're done with the fifth inning. And at that point, you know, it was pretty much over. Tidwell does give up a couple more runs. But then what do? You go out and you put up I believe, three more in the ninth?
Two in the ninth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I believe one of those was a home run that was just really a dagger.
Evan Russell, Evan Russell homered, yeah. And that was pretty much it. For Palminteri, we did strike out with those bases loaded in the eighth inning as well, I believe it was, the eighth inning, because that really would have just ended his career completely.
It would have been nice to 20-piece him. It would have been real nice to 20-piece him. But with the 15 runs, I don't know if you guys saw this tweet, Tennessee scored more points with 15 runs than Tennessee has scored against LSU in football since 2006, with the scoring being 10. 7, 14, and 14 in the four games of football that Tennessee has played against LSU. Tennessee baseball gets 15 points in one game. I thought that was pretty impressive.
All right, well, on the other side, we're going to have Logan Quinton on the phone to break down these games a little further, plus look ahead to Omaha. Phone lines are open, too, if you want to hop on after Logan. But right now, let's go ahead and take a quick break. See you back on the other side.
One more
Song, man. The vibes are right this Monday.
It's a good song.
It's a great Monday. And it's about to get even better because we got our guy, Logan Quinton, the baseball brain himself, writer over at the Fan Run website, gives you all the best baseball information you ever need to know. LDQ Sports on Twitter. Logan Quinton, my man, what is up? How are you?
Great, gentlemen. I mean, how good does it feel to wake up and know that this team is going to Omaha? And they exceeded expectations. They took care of business. Haven't lost a game in these regional plays. So, man, I couldn't be more excited. This town needs it. The community needs it. The university. I mean, this is just awesome to witness.
It's the kind of feeling where you don't have to hit snooze on your alarm Monday morning, where you can just get out of bed on the first try.
That's a good way to put it.
Logan, did you see the stat that SEC Network casually threw out there? Team with the most wins without a loss in super regional history, Tennessee at 6-0.
Yes.
Did you think that was kind of a cheap stat to throw out there? Be honest.
I'll be honest, that's a little small sample size compared to some of these other teams that have been there, you know, over a dozen times. But, hey, Tennessee takes care of business when it's there. I mean, it's not just a one-time thing. They've been there a few times. So, but, yeah, it is a small sample for sure.
All right, Logan, so two very different games, obviously. Saturday you get a rainy game, a 4-2 game where you just kind of grind it out, you know, moving guys over and the fielder's choice that drives in a run and things of that nature. And then obviously, Sunday you pull out the big sticks and you go yard time and time again and hang 15 on the Tigers. Winning in different types of ways like this, does that really, does that show you anything else about this team that you didn't already know?
Not really. I mean, they did, like we talked about before, for most of the season, that's kind of the way they operated. They worked counts, got on base, sacrificed guys over, and then, like, throughout the course of a game, you would get your couple extra base hits and things like that. And then before you know it, like, they're putting up 6-7 runs. But then now they've morphed into this team, this power-hitting team, but that's not the only thing they rely on. So it's probably the toughest lineup left remaining, in my opinion, because 1-9 it can get you in various ways. And that's been so fascinating for me to watch. I mean, this is a team, three quarters through the season, they were kind of in the middle of the pack in the SEC in terms of the home run. Well, now they're number two in terms of the teams left standing in home runs. They're sniffing 100. On the season, that when they get that mark, and I think they will, they'll have over 100 home runs and 100 doubles on the year. It's been really impressive to watch all those guys develop because they can all beat you in different ways, and for them to morph into this power hitting team and not lose that plate discipline has been pretty special to watch.
Logan, when you look at Omaha, you know, obviously in that ballpark, home runs are hard to come by, and it's oftentimes kind of a different game stylistically and offensively because of how big that park plays. You know, do you think that could potentially be something that's to Tennessee's advantage?
Yeah, I think they can play in any park. Like I said, for most of the year, they've operated without really relying on it, so they're going to find gaps. These guys aren't just pull hitters. Like Drew Gilbert's not just a lefty dead pull guy. These guys can find the gaps. And we saw that a little bit in Hoover. You know, Hoover's a lot of the same way. That's a big park. But to me, that just means more doubles. This is Tennessee leads all the teams left standing in doubles. So I'll look for that to continue. But one thing it is going to help is a guy like Chad Dallas, who has a little trouble keeping it in the park. That's only going to bode well for him. So I think Tennessee would play really well in that park.
All right, Logan, looking back at this past weekend, you know, what were your thoughts on the way that Paul Maneri managed his starting pitchers as well as his bullpen, with Marceau getting pulled early, with us not seeing Fontenot until, you know, the series was already out of hand, and some of those other
decisions.
That
was interesting. That was interesting to me. The thought that crossed my mind once I saw Marceau, this is a guy I followed quite a bit this year and was really impressed with. I really like that guy. Love him as a draft prospect. But he was topping out at around 89, and I knew he was in trouble once I saw that. He's a guy that can usually sit his fastball 91 to 93. He has a lot of pitch ability. He can, you know, beat you in other ways. But I think there was something going on there. I don't know if it had to do with the short rest. I wouldn't think so, just because, you know, he threw one inning Monday. So I guess going back to last week, I think he threw Saturday, Monday, or Friday, Monday. Either way, Monday was just an inning in an elimination do-or-die situation against Oregon. I wouldn't think that it would be, you know, a fatigue factor. Maybe it was, or maybe it was some other, just wasn't his day physically. But I knew he was in trouble, and I think Maneri saw that. But a guy like that, I mean, Marceau's a bulldog. I feel like you kind of leave him in. It wasn't like things opened up at that point. So that I was kind of scratching my head over that one. And like you said, waiting till the end before it's too late to bring Fontenot in, that was another bizarre moment. But I think Tennessee was just a buzzsaw. I mean, they ran into a buzzsaw, and I think Maneri could kind of feel it a little bit. But for sure, without a doubt, those I think they cleaned the bullpen out. I think maybe some frat guys, maybe some you know, guys off the street in the stands that were about to go home to Baton Rouge, maybe they pulled them in, got them a uniform, and threw them in there. That's kind of what it felt like.
Again, talking with Logan Quinton of Fan Run Radio's website, the best baseball writer in town. Logan, on the flip side of things, Tennessee seemed to manage their pitching staff really well, but, you know, unfortunately, they were almost so dominant that you couldn't get Will Heflin on the mound at any point. You couldn't get Kirby Connell out there. You know, Redmond Walsh barely got any time on the mound. But especially looking at guys like Heflin and Kirby, you know, are you a little worried that, you know, they're now going to go an extended period of time without seeing live batters?
Not too much. You mentioned it. I've got to point out, you know, the job that these pitchers did. When you combine the two games, Tennessee used five pitchers. They had 25 strikeouts to just one walk. I mean, that's just amazing. So you take that any day. And I thought it was really cool that, you know, Vitello let Redmond Walsh cap things off, the local product from Alcoa. That had to be a special moment for him. But like you said, there's some guys, it's almost a good problem to have, right? Like you want to get guys in, and Tennessee's been used to using, you know, multiple arms, you know, every game, especially in leverage games. And you sort of plan for that this weekend, I would think. And you know, you look up and just use five pitchers. Really, they could have got away with four. They didn't have to use Walsh. A lot of people question that, but I think it had to do with the fact that he is the local product, wanted to punch that ticket, you know, for him. But, yeah, no, I think Kirby, in terms of Kirby, the way he could handle it, that dude, he's been skipped a couple of times on weekends, and it's not really effective. He's kind of, he is who he is. That guy is going to, you know, go out there and grind it no matter if he has 1 hour rest or 1 or 2 weeks rest. And Heflin, you know, I kind of feel like this might be, you know, a moment for him to kind of just rest, because he's been like big game Will, you know, it seems like the past few weeks. And he's a veteran guy that I think knows how to handle these situations. And maybe he was due for a rest. I think it was meant to be in that regard. But they're going to need, you know, guys like that getting a weekend off. They're probably going to need that going forward, because if you're going to make it all the way to this thing through Omaha, I mean, it's a grind. It's over a week from start to finish. So they're going to have all hands on deck in Omaha if they look to get to the title game and push through that. So,
all right, Logan, I do, while we have you, non-Tennessee baseball related, I do want to get just your thoughts on Dave Van Horn's decision to start Copps for Arkansas and then ultimately Arkansas getting beat by NC State. Just while I have you, just such a big thing that happened.
Well, for Kevin Copps' sake, maybe it's a good thing that the Hog season came to an end in terms of his career going forward, because I think that they were just running him into the ground, honestly. I mean, I see why you do it, but in this day and age, you know, we're used to seeing that type of stuff, like, you know, a decade ago, guys in college throwing, you know, 130 pitches, like that was the norm. But to have this guy start with Tommy John history, have this guy start when you have this plan for him all year long to kind of be this long reliever, this ultimate weapon. I don't know why you don't. I mean, they pitched Wicklander anyway at the end, so why not just use Wicklander as an opener? I understand he can't give you the length as normal, but open with Wicklander, and then you're in kind of the same scenario you've been all year bringing Copps in. But I think it was 122 pitches. He pitched great, but at the end of the day, it didn't work out for them as a team. So it'll be interesting to see how Kevin Copps does going forward. I think he'll be, you know, a really high draft pick. But, yeah, that I was scratching my head over that one. I think that was a dangerous scenario, especially if they would have survived in advance and they continue those type of methods of stretching him out. Don't think it would have worked out well for Kevin Copps.
All right, last question before we got to let you go. We got two big game threes today, Dallas Baptist and Virginia. Obviously, Tennessee, you know, gets the winner of that one in game one. And then also on the side of the bracket that we're on, Mississippi State and Notre Dame. As Tennessee fans, who should we be rooting for in those two matchups?
I think in the first one you mentioned, probably Virginia. They're a likable team, first of all. They do a lot of things well. They don't have the sexy stats, but they got the good overall pitching, a team ERA pitching of like 370. They remind me of what Tennessee was before they kind of morphed into this big villain in this high-powered offense. Dallas Baptist, they are potent on with the bats. They're up there with Tennessee. Dallas Baptist has the most home runs out of any team left standing with over 100. So they have a chance to be in that 100-100 club when you talk about home runs and doubles. Tennessee would have their work cut out for them to play Dallas Baptist, especially when you're talking about just one game. And then as far as Mississippi State, Notre Dame is a hard one to figure. That conference-only schedule, you know, how good are they really in terms of RPI? Mississippi State, we all know how good they are. Tennessee blew them out of the water in the SEC tournament, but you just can't expect that to happen again. Mississippi State has, you know, top-end pitching to go along with a potent offense. But if somehow Notre Dame can knock them off, like, I would lean that way. Just because if you run into Mississippi State again, you can't expect, you know, another blowout. So I would go, in short, my answers would be probably Notre Dame and Virginia.
All right, well, thank you, Logan, and I'm sure we're going to have you on again later this week once the bracket's set and once we really get closer to Omaha itself. But we appreciate it. Again, that was Logan Quinton. You can find him on Twitter at LDQ Sports. The best baseball writer in the biz, for sure.
At least top five.
At least top five. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side, though. We got a little hockey update. Hey, let's do that hockey. 10:55 back on the Blitz. Gonna have to do the quickest Let's Do That hockey of all time, because we gotta get back out of here. But not a whole lot of hockey to do anyway, as we're down out of the final four teams, getting down to the end of things. And we had the first series kick off yesterday. Game one, the Islanders and the Lightning down in Tampa. And the Lightning, really one of the hottest teams in the playoffs. They're playing some really good hockey, obviously trying to defend their title from last year. But, man, it was the Islanders that jumped all over them to start things off. We had a scoreless first, but then Barzal puts one in, his fourth goal of the playoffs in the second period. And Pulock also gets his fourth of the playoffs, puts the Islanders up 2-0.
Lightning made it interesting there
Lightning were able to get a power play goal from Braden Point there towards the end, and then they made a nice little push, but it was a little too late, and kind of a surprising result, at least to me. The Islanders take game one 2-1. They steal one on the road.
I mean, it's good to get that first one on the road.
They've been playing pretty good on the road.
They seem like a team of destiny.
That's the weird thing. Okay, so all four of these teams, or at least the Islanders, the Habs, and the Golden Knights, they all kind of feel like they have, you know, a little bit of a destiny vibe.
And then you have
them.
That one favorite that's been the constant favorite all season.
At least, especially the Islanders and the Canadiens, both of them have a real destiny vibe to them.
Yeah, I'm rooting for both of those teams
tonight. Yeah, tonight you have game one between the Canadiens and the Golden Knights. That one in Las Vegas, 9 p.m. tonight. Oh. On the West Coast.
I think the Canadians are going to get murdered tonight.
Yeah.
I don't think they're ready to play in front of a crowd.
It depends on how Price is. If Carey Price
he's the kind of guy that can steal a series, and he's kind of helped them steal two at this point.
Yeah. I just don't know if they're going to be ready. They haven't played in front of a crowd all season long.
That is a good point.
They haven't played in front of a full crowd, but Montreal was actually the only Canadian team that was allowed to have fans.
They had like 400 people, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't a full crowd. But
they've never been in a mean stadium
been in a playoff atmosphere yet. And the Golden Knights, man, they're good. But I don't know. I mean, Canadians have won 7 in a row now. Going to be a really fun series, I think, maybe. Or it could just be, like, a very quick one.
The opposite of the Winnipeg series.
No, I'm more excited, definitely, for the Islanders-Lightning series.
I'm more excited for this one. And
really?
I don't know why. I guess I just don't really like the Islanders or the Lightning very much. But, yeah, that's your hockey update. We'll let you know how tonight goes tomorrow. Hour one of the Blitz over. Got a big hour two still coming up for you. Stay tuned in. Stay locked in.